Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, cut us a check.
LeBron James has fouled out for the first time since the playoffs of last season.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, a hot block commander.
Give it to you. How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, pulling like some rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates to speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26 for the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with 5 nights at the round table. 5 Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Squad, what's good, everybody? Right back at you. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and seated around the table with me, my partners, Jimmy Williams and B. Austin. We got a great show for you today. We'll discuss the Spurs' beatdown of the Memphis Grizzlies, the slugfest between the Heat and the Pacers, and much, much more. But right now, make sure you join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to join in the conversation. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline. That number is 323-410-0012. Before we get started, our team needs to get their due. The future of sports talk radio has arrived, so be sure to listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Also, check out Brandon and Daniel on Sports Trap Radio Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, also on Blog Talk Radio. But don't worry, if you can't catch the fellas live, you can hear and watch all of our partner shows at warroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication three times on Fridays on newvibradio.com. That's 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. But right now, the blueprint is going to tell us what happened this week while you good folks were on your grind.
You already know. What's up, gentlemen? How y'all doing?
Chilling.
Hey, man, this Hollywood Cole calling in, and I want to send a shout-out to the greatest Cleveland Cavalier of all time, Bingo Smith.
Bingo.
Yo, man. What the hell he talking about, man? I'm just, you know, snapping necks and cashing large checks. Yo, another shout-out. Shout-out to Black Flag Radio, man. I talked to homie Keo earlier, so look out for Black Flag Radio, also on Blog Talk Network. But
Keo,
While You Were on the Grind is brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, and that includes the NFL Sunday Ticket, go to our website,
Preach,
which is warroomsports.com. It's like 98 days left of football. Yo, they have a name for people who don't have the NFL Sunday Ticket. You know what that is, Dad?
What's that?
It's called women. Yo, anyway, go to warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and get your NFL Sunday Ticket, because all real men have it. Now, with that being said, let's talk about some headlines. And this is a sports story, by the way, for those who question that. Keyshawn Johnson passed me the damn ball. He chases Justin Bieber to his home to confront him about speeding in their gated community. The Bieber is out of control right now. I don't know if y'all know this, but Keyshawn lives in his community and chased him down. Yo, but Bieber supposedly was like, allegedly was kind of shook and didn't want to get out the car and respond to my man.
Well, so Bieber was in his Ferrari and Keyshawn was in his Prius. And you know what? That's been like the butt of the joke all week. But for some reason, a lot of celebrities, especially out in Hollywood, out in California, drive Priuses for some reason. I guess they're trying to
come on, man.
Save their carbon footprint, right? Save that gas.
That's right. I'm trying to copy a Prius, the color duck sauce. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Exactly. And think about it. Everybody who's laughing at Keyshawn, first of all, for owning a Prius, don't forget the part of this story where it says he lives in the same gated community as Justin Bieber. We know the kind of money Bieber getting. So it looks like Keyshawn is doing right by
his savings and his paychecks.
But the story is crazy because what they said was he flew past Keyshawn
Keyshawn was actually in the car with one of his kids. He drove his kid home and then chased Justin Bieber to his house. They keep using the word chase. I'm pretty sure by the time he dropped his kid off, Justin Bieber speeding in his Ferrari was already at his house. But they said he gets to his house and tries to get him to come out, and he wouldn't come outside. But
soft, dude.
What's Key, like 6'4", 220? Did he really expect Justin Bieber to come out with an angry black dude on his lawn screaming at him?
Probably just wanted to holler at him, though. Man, first thing I got to say, because I've seen a lot of that on social media, clowning my man Keyshawn for driving Prius. Y'all don't know the difference between guns and butter, man. That's all I got to say, man.
Guns and butter.
This whole story is crazy. Bees better slow down, man.
I understand it, though, man. I live, y'all know this, I live in a little development. It's not gated, but it's a development. And we got this stop sign at the top of my block. But since we're inside of the development, it seems like nobody respects this stop sign. So people are, like, flying through it all day. And I'm like Keyshawn. I'm like the angry old man with the house. You know, I'm standing on my lawn screaming at people. You know, to slow down, it's a stop sign, this and that. I just think something real bad is going to happen one day, you know, and I'm trying to do my part to prevent that. But, you know, it seems like if you're not on a regular, you know, road outside on the regular streets, people don't really respect that kind of stuff. So I hope nothing has to happen. If something happened to my kid, then, you know, Keyshawn, this is going to be Keyshawn to the 100th power. So I feel you, Keyshawn, man. He putting your family in danger.
He out of control right now. Anyway, that stuff you hear about him is not too positive, man. But I definitely am not trying to, like, you know, spend a lot of time talking about Bieber.
Yeah. Funk.
Funk. Funk. Funk.
Funk. Slow down, baby. Slow down, baby. Slow down, Bieber.
Telling Bieber to slow down.
He used to play EPMD for real. The hell with Bieber, real good. Any excuse you get to play EPMD, you got to take it. But that's
Bieber
drew a bow there. I want to hear my man P. Austin has to say about this this next story. Michael Vick, you know, the man with weapons for days. You know what I'm saying? He got two weapons. Anyway, Michael Vick says he's still the fastest quarterback in the entire National Football League. Do you believe him? And even if you are the fastest quarterback, who really cares? Because the last Super Bowl winning quarterback, I remember, wasn't that fast.
Austin. Before you go in, let me read you his quote. He said, "These guys are young and they're fast and they're quick. The thing I do have is a very quick get up. I really don't feel like there's a quarterback in the league who could beat me in a 40-yard dash. If somebody wants to set something up, I'll be more than glad to accept the challenge. But as of right now, I'm going to say me, but Colin Kaepernick is fast and RG3 is fast as well. So, Austin, if you want to set something up, he's more than happy. You know, if you want to set up like a film session, maybe he'll come to that too.
Yeah, I'm definitely, is he reaching out to me to teach him how to read? Here's my response to this shenanigan. And I want all Philadelphia Eagles fans to listen in closely, and I'm going to put my Uncle Ruckus on, all black people, because those are the ones that were defending this tomfoolery. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, who happens to also be a pretty athletic and fast guy in his own right, Andrew Luck, Joe Flacco, Ben Roethlisberger, you know what these guys have in common? Do you know, Jimmy?
Listen, man.
Can read the defense and throw a ball.
They're not sitting around talking about which one of them is the fastest. They're not talking about who can put up the most weight in the weight room. They're probably either working on their golf swing or they're in the film room studying defensive sets and coverages intently, because they understand that accuracy, IQ, and the ability to make snap decisions and deliver a football in a tight space, in a timely manner, is what will win championships and make them successful ultimately. Meanwhile, the quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles is talking about how fast his 40 time is.
Dream team.
That dream thing.
Dynasty.
Yo, I'm not even gonna make this.
Yo,
I'm not even gonna make this a Reese thing. I'm gonna make this a Mike Vick thing because Warren Moon was a hell of a quarterback who also wasn't fast, by the way.
Absolutely.
I just wonder.
No, when I turned it into a race thing, I'm talking about the people that I've seen on social media defending this clown, trash, sham mockery. And I'm not really a Mike Vick hater because I support the brother's heart.
You're not?
I think he has a tremendous heart. He's not a coward. He takes his licks and keeps on ticking. But he is dumber than a boot full of water.
Yo! Listen, man. Listen, all I'm saying is, when I first heard it, I just busted out laughing because I'm thinking, like, what does that have to do with anything? You know what I mean? In terms of
I have three weapons, my arm and my leg.
Yo, but he's saying set something up. First of all, neither one of these guys live in the same city, Jimmy. So if he's saying set it up, he's basically saying he's willing to travel to race somebody and pull a hamstring and make every Philadelphia Eagles fan upset.
Happy.
Well, I'm not
some of y'all be happy. Don't front.
I'm not
going to
be happy. But
all I'm saying is this, though, man.
It's definitely
not. Austin, to your point, you're right. I mean, this is something that a quarterback should be sitting around bragging about how fast he is because it's kind of irrelevant. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not what you're out there for. It's like you're running back bragging about how good of a cornerback he is. It's like, you know, it's like, listen, man.
Yo, and the thing is, of course, he was asked this. So we're going to. I'm gonna give him that benefit of the doubt, the fact that he was asked this question.
I'm not.
But you can't take the bait. You can't allow yourself to get into any kind of you can't allow yourself to get into any kind of conversations where you know, it has nothing to do with nothing. It's a setup.
As a man,
for no reason.
You have a personal brand. It's kind of like the Ray J versus Fabulous thing.
What?
People should know what they can and can't get away with in asking you questions. If someone were to ask Peyton Manning that, security would come immediately and escort him out of the building, even if
it's
but
it's the same thing on the field, though. You know, teams blitz the Eagles on 90% of the downs because they know they can.
Now they don't even blitz. They hide it. They disguise it, and he thinks they're blitzing.
Yo, real quick though, what the f does this guy do with Ray J and Fab?
Disguise it for what?
Correlation and the analogy. I don't get it, yo.
Disguise.
You don't get
why?
The analogy. Ray J.
Why would they
Ray
waste?
J knew. Ray J should have known not to test Samai.
But Austin, why would they waste the energy of disguising it? I don't get that.
Yo,
no meaning.
Let's move on, man. Cause yo, this boy went
for who? For why? Why would they disguise it?
Let's talk about another crazy story, man.
Just
Joe
go.
Theismann.
He ain't gonna stop it.
Joe Theismann, aka Stanky Leg, he says that LeBron
Koloff
could be an NFL quarterback and should really like give it a shot. He really believes he can play the position and give it a shot.
He's a Koloff.
Thinking about your last statement, B. Austin, how do you think LeBron would fare as a quarterback? Will he talk about how much he bench presses or,
I really feel like there's no grounds for this. Folks, listen, audience, listeners, we apologize. This is a slow news cycle, man. And Joe Theismann is always drinking, so he's always funny.
You talked about that stuff. A bunch of people defended this on social media this week too. A lot of people said, "Yeah,
of course
LeBron
they do."
Everybody that lives in LeBron
shorts defended it. I'm a humor to people. I think that LeBron could play professional football athletically. Could he be a quarterback? I don't think so. I don't know.
I think it's disrespectful to everybody who's ever suited up to play quarterback because, yes, like Theismann says, he's the most physical specimen we have in professional sports. But just like you just spoke about with the Michael Vick thing, being physical and being athletic is not really the top two, you know, attributes you need from a good quarterback. And this is what he said, not a quote.
Ryan
Leaf
is a physical specimen.
Theismann said, "I would love to work him out, Koloff, and also serve as his agent. I'll go wherever he wants this summer. He could play another 4 years in the NBA before seriously trying the NFL. There are not a lot of 38 or 39-year-old basketball players, but there are 38 and 39-year-old quarterbacks, so there's always time for him. He's dead serious. He's dead serious here. Come on, he's a physical specimen, but can he throw an accurate slant route? Can he read a defense? Can he go into the film room and understand exactly what he's saying?
There. I mean, Ryan Leaf was a physical specimen. Vince Young coming in the league was a physical specimen. I can give you a number. Jamarcus Russell was a physical specimen. He could throw 80 yards from his knees. But at the end of the day,
now you're on the same knees begging to get back into the league.
Man, is he? But all I'm saying is being a physical specimen and playing the quarter, it's very disrespectful. If I'm a quarterback, I would go to Theismann and, like, you know, ask him to, you know, have a few words with him.
You would go to the whole head body?
I just keep the body leg, move. The stanky leg, the jaunted LT in him. Anyway, I don't know, man. It's definitely a dumb story, man.
Is it a coincidence that it's coming from a Redskins player or a Redskins related individual? Never mind.
He's just a part of the Koloff family. You know, they have the most members of the Koloff family, but
the key to Koloff. Anyway, listen, the Tampa Bay Rays suspended prospect Josh Sale. Well, this is what he did. He did something that he often does. He was bragging on Facebook about disrespecting a stripper in a club. We're not going to suspend B. Austin.
His Facebook post said, threw 50 cents at a stripper tonight. First time. Got kicked out and she got so mad, thought she was going to cry. You're a stripper. Be thankful. he got suspended for that.
It's a hula house, not the Taj Mahal.
Somebody tell the Rays that. Like, come on, really?
Yo. He actually is now my favorite baseball player, and it has nothing to do with his ball game.
We know that's the case. He'll have one.
Yo, I'm about to say, he's not even in the majors yet. But
yeah, he's not even in the majors yet. He already got suspended, man. I found it to be a little bit humorous, but I laugh at a lot of things, man. Listen, nothing to me is offensive if it's funny. So, therefore, you can kind of get away with saying whatever as long as it makes me laugh. With that being said, it's one of those things, man. We always talk about this, Dev, how you have freedom of speech, but you have to deal with the consequences of your speech. So,
exactly.
Yo, they shouldn't have suspended my man, yo.
Hey, he was giving bad publicity to the Tampa Bay Rays, so the Tampa Bay Rays felt it was necessary to do what they had to do.
That young Hoover was that much closer to paying her tuition.
Hey, what about...
Yo, and if y'all don't know what we talk about, yo, by the way, I just got to get people, because, you know, sometimes we talk
shout
in
out
our own
the
language,
Nuggets.
Man. The Boardwalk Empire, man. And by the way, I remember the name of this episode, Dev, just because it was a hilarious. It was called Bone for Tuna, because it was a funny episode.
I gotta go back through it, because after I deleted them all, I can't even find them to show anybody. Plus, I want to make it a sound clip on here.
Yo, it was called Bone for Tuna was the episode, by the way, on Boardwalk Empire, and he called him Hoover. Anyway, go ahead, Dad.
He said it's a hoo-house.
Run through these birthdays real quick, good brother.
All right, didn't you want to talk about Shaquille O'Neal with his big face on a can of soda?
Oh, you want to talk about Shaq and his new deal.
He got a new deal with Aaron Beverages. Shazam.
I just want to know why his face is so big on the soda can.
Yeah, all right, well, here's the story. Basically, TNT analyst.
I heard from
NBA
a hooligan that everything is big, but what counts on shit? Never mind, go ahead.
Yo,
because why are you worried about that?
Everything you were getting ready to say. anyway, TNT analyst, former NBA player, future Hall of Famer, Shaquille Rashawn O'Neal, signed a deal with Arizona Beverage Company to put out 50 million Shaq soda cans. You know, Shaq is leveraging his name since he's not playing and he's everything, but the can... The cans are just out of control, and the flavors are deep.
The cans are really out of control.
Vanilla cream, blueberry cream, like, yo. But
and
the cans are like
strawberry and, like, peach. That's the flavors he grew up drinking in Newark. Because I know back in Philly, like, some vanilla soda and some peach soda, that was the truth.
You already know.
99 cents.
You got to go to the special places to find those flavors. Can't just walk into the
store. Save a lot.
Anyway, but Shaq is leveraging his brand once again to try to build his empire, getting this young magic on. I don't know how successful these cans will be. because they're very creepy and with the wax flavors. But nonetheless, how do you talk about this, Austin? What do you think about Shaquille Rashawn O'Neal?
It's quite possible that the next time the young baseball player goes to the club, he can throw a vanilla cream or can on.
And by the way, listen, man, I respect Shaq for making the moves he's making after basketball, but I still don't believe he can fit inside that Buick, and that's the only thing I have to say about that.
Yeah, he's lying.
Dev.
Yo, shout out to Shaq for never spending a game check.
Yeah, he probably spent them now. Let's give a couple birthday shout-outs. Of course, birthdays are now brought to you by Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates for the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities. Visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area and beyond. Visit www.alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700 and make sure you tell them War Room Sports sent you.
It's my birthday. Yay!
All right.
Shout out to one Mr. Manuel Aristides Ramirez Onisilda. His name is crazy. Better known as Manny Ramirez. Manny Ramirez turns 41 today. Aurelian Smith Jr., better known as, for all you WWF fans, and I said F, not E, Jake the Snake Roberts, the master of the DDT. DDT the hell out of you, and then put a snake on you and let it crawl around you. He turns 58 today. Peter John Carlissimo, better known as PJ Carlissimo, the coach that got choked out by Latrell Sprewell. He turns 64 today. And one Mr. Gail Eugene Sayers turns 70 today. What was he? The Kansas Comet.
Yeah,
all right. So you guys can check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send us a message about our company, show, or inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles. In the All's Fair in Sports and War blog, I want to give a shout-out to Chris Price for his LeBron James article that he wrote for us and we released yesterday. Got a huge response. And make sure you click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app, and to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to do that, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. If you want to call in and speak to us, just dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Just press 1 when you're prompted. If you already listen from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. All right. Anything going on in the Chizat room?
Yo, just want to was mentioned that yesterday was Melo's birthday. So, happy belated to the man Carmelo.
Honey Nut Cheerios, probably, you know, treated him right. Honey Nut.
Yeah. That's all I got to say on that. Other than that, man, you said you got somebody you want to talk about, but brother, let's jump right into the conversation, man.
Oh, yes, sir. We're going to do a little round of HOF or FOH. For those listening for the first time, it's a little something we do. War Room Sports here, we have our own Hall of Fame for every sport. So once in a while, we find a player from any sport, and we debate whether or not this player is Hall of Fame worthy, HOF, or if he should FOH. Use your imagination and figure out what that means. But we do have a subject today. And as a matter of fact, this subject that we're going to talk about today, he was just featured in our birthday section. So, first of all, HOF FOH is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Go to our website, click on the sponsors tab, click on the Bay Financial Services logo, and make sure you contact those brothers to get your money right. But, fellas, let's talk about one Mr. Gail Sayers.
Ha!
Okay, so we know Gail Sayers. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say this. This is actually going to be a debate, not even about Gail Sayers. It's about longevity and how long you have to play before you should be eligible for the Hall of Fame. Because any Gail Sayers debate turns into a debate about 5 to 10 other players, you know, a la Terrell Davis or a bunch of other guys that, you know, have put up crazy numbers, crazy dominant, but just career was cut short. So let's jump right into it, though. Go ahead. You got it.
All right. So Gail Sayers, like Jimmy said, his career cannot be defined by longevity. He's listed as playing 7 seasons, but really he played 5 seasons because he spent the 1970 season and the 1971 season trying to come back from injuries that, you know, basically derailed his career. So he really had a 5-year run because he only played in 2 games in 70 and 71, respectively. We can look at his statistics before we even start the debate. Of course, he was a running back, a kick returner, and a punt returner. So as far as rushing goes, he was very versatile as a player. But as far as rushing goes, 991 attempts for 4,956 yards, 39 touchdowns. As a receiver out of the backfield, he caught 112 passes for 1,307 yards, 9 touchdowns. And as a kick returner, well, let's go punt returns first. He had 27 punt returns for 391 yards, 2 touchdowns. His long was an 85-yarder, 14.5 yards per return. Kick returns is where he really excelled. He had 91 returns for 2,781 yards, 6 touchdowns, a long of 103 yards, and a crazy average of 30.6 yards per kick return. And altogether, he had about 34 fumbles and lost 21 of them. So that's a 5-year career. B. Austin, what say you? Because when I was saying the whole birthday shout out, I heard you using the O word in the background. You're calling the ball overrated?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This is a classic case of someone who's. His ability, his athletic ability, revolutionized the game. And so this is one place where the criteria that Jimmy has memorialized is war room criteria. Can you tell the narrative of a sport without including a player as a determinant? Well, it's been made in the media so that you really can't tell the story of football without Gail Sayers. But does that mean that he warrants being in the Hall of Fame? Statistically, definitely not. To give some context to the yardage and the stats that he amassed, he did play in 2 less games. So he played in 14-game seasons as opposed to 16-game seasons, which means over 5 years that would have amounted to 10 more games. I don't know how that would have affected his stats. I don't believe that it would have meant a lot more because he only averaged 72 yards per game rushing. So that may have put him over 1,000, maybe 2 more times. I don't know. But I have to go FOH. I have to go FOH because I think he gets in based on the media acclaim that he gets. He gets in based on his dynamic.
Well, you mean got in because he's already in the pro
football. He got in because of that, and he's gotten in because he's a likable guy. He's got a great personality, but I don't know that he deserves it because we can name guys like Terrell Davis. We can name guys that equally had short careers but were pretty great.
Bo
and
Jackson.
Didn't get in, and then we can name,
Bo knows.
Then we get Bo Jackson. I think Bo should be in everybody's Hall of Fame in every sport. Or we could go to guys like Fred Taylor or Ricky Waters, who amassed, you know, pretty respectable, maybe even Hall of Fame level stats, but they weren't as dominant, you know. So I don't know. He creates a conundrum for me. So I go with FOH.
You know what? Besides what he did prior to coming to the NFL, I think Gail Sayers is a player whose, like, rookie year statistics carry the people who, you know, they carry the arguments of the people who believe that he wholeheartedly deserves to be in the NFL, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Because as a rookie, he scored 22 touchdowns, not just rushing, but 22 total touchdowns. He led the league in rushing twice at 1,231 yards and 1,032 yards. We look at those numbers as not being that impressive, but we got to remember when he played, they were playing 14-game seasons. Now, that's not an excuse either, because if you're just getting 100 yards per game, which is, you know, 100 yards is basically what people look at as, oh, he had a great game. They count 100-yard games, basically. And for the rest of – those are the only two seasons that he even amassed over 1,000 yards rushing. Now, his seasons go 867 yards, 1,231, then 880, then 856, then 1,032, and then those two throwaway seasons of 52 yards and 38 yards. So I'm not even going to, you know, penalize him for those two seasons. I mean, it destroys his average. Well, not really. It destroys his per-season average, but he only had 23 carries.
He only played two games in each of those seasons.
Yeah, he had 23 carries in one season in two games, and he had 13 carries in the other one. And that's another thing. Even as the superstar that we know Gale Sayers as, he didn't even get touches like a feature running back. And that might be because he did so much other stuff. You know, they didn't just want to put him out there like that. But if you watch a highlight reel, you know, he was the first dude out there shaking and baking everybody. But, you know, it's not just about statistics, but I still don't think his statistics carry enough weight. And I'm not the type of person – I didn't get to see Gale Sayers play live. But from the research that I've done, it seems like his early season, his rookie season, you know, his early time in the NFL kind of carries his weight, you know, throughout the rest of his career. So, unfortunately, I'm going to probably have to agree with the brother B. Austin. And this is blasphemous to a lot of football fans out there, especially ones who, you know, just take their opinion from things that they've seen on TV or hear from other people. But I'm going to have to say FOH to Gale Sayers as well.
All right.
But,
now,
Jimmy, by your criteria,
yeah,
which
I'm
is a great criteria.
I'm about
your
to
criteria
jump into
great.
That. I'm about to jump into
and if you,
the,
yeah,
into
if you
the,
add
the,
that,
Jimmy
then,
Williams
you
official
know.
Hall of Fame criteria. But
you can't tell it.
I actually will say HOF, and here's why. And not only based upon my criteria of being able to tell the narrative of the sport without this gentleman's name, but I it's funny because I'm a huge Terrell Davis fan for obvious reasons. So I've had this argument several times, and when I started to do research, I realized that let me give you an example. Let's pick a random player, Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal played damn near 20 years, but when you look at his body of work, he only had 5 dominant years. So there are a lot of guys that stay around a long period of time, have a stretch where they're very dominant and just, like, cruise for the rest and compile stats, who are considered Hall of Famers, and people would say Hall of Fame without question. The difference is guys like a Terrell Davis or a Gale Sayers, their careers cut short because of injury, they don't have the chance. Now, if Gale Sayers stayed around and wasn't the same player, but compiled a bunch of stats, a lot of people would make the argument for him being in the Hall of Fame.
Jim, a lot of people's criteria, I'm not going to say, you know, just the criteria, because there's no the criteria, but a lot of people's criteria has something to do with longevity as well. Like, you don't want to flash every flash in the pan who was nice to
not
be in the Hall
of
Fame.
Not every flash in the pan,
like,
but if
you
can put together a couple seasons where you were dominant and considered one of the best players of the sport, where when the story or the narrative of the sport is told, you have to be mentioned. That has
and in
to be
his
taken
time,
into
he
consideration.
He was, definitely.
And that has to be taken into consideration, considering there are guys that lay around forever and just compile stats. I mean, how many dominant years did Robert Parrish have? Yet he's in the Hall of Fame because he played for a long period of time to compile stats.
I don't know if he should
I'm just saying,
be.
I can give name after name of guys that have done this. So for me, if you have a 5-year stretch, and now you don't want to flash in plans a guy that has one great year. He had more than one great year, and he goes down as being one of the first elusive backs at his side. Because before him, you had guys like Jim Brown, you know, and guys who were bruisers. He was the first elusive back. He was Barry Sanders before Barry Sanders. He was one of the best kick returners, punt returners. But the guy, you
so basically,
know, had a devastating
and I
record.
Can understand that if you're saying, like, he's probably in the Hall of Fame more for his impact and maybe his not his impact for his influence on the game.
He
after
revolutionized the game.
Maybe.
He revolutionized the game. And
I can see
that. That has to be taken into account. And I just think that when you look at a lot of players, right, and a lot of times we don't do this, but when you look at a lot of players and you look at how many dominant years they have, some players who we consider great in multiple sports, like in every sport we can go to, really only had two or three great years and then it fizzled out. You know what I mean? But have stayed around long enough to compile a great deal of stats. When you look at a guy like, you know, an Art Monk. Art Monk had maybe three great years and just stayed around for a long damn time.
Hey, but Jim, when people make the comparison between, like, a Gale Sayers and Terrell Davis, I mean, okay, let's go back to statistically. And everybody who listens to this show knows that we're not the statistics or the end-all, be-all, but, you know, just for sake of this argument, I look at Terrell Davis. Gale Sayers had five. Terrell Davis really only had four, you know, years, because after his fourth year, he played in four games, five games, and then eight games. So his career was basically over after that 98 season. But
Terrell Davis
the bulk of his yardage, the bulk of his yardage was made within four seasons, and he finished with 7,607 yards. His first 4 years went like this.
I said Terrell Davis was far more dominant than.
Oh, I thought you said far from dominant, yo. I was about to
say, he's about to go crazy on you. He's about to go crazy on you. Well, let's talk about his dominance as far as yardage is concerned. His first year, 1,117 yards, then 1,538, then 1,750, and then he had the 2,000-yard year with 2,008 yards. So he progressively got better statistically
than the knees,
you know, every year. Like, even when you go back to Gale Sayers, he was kind of up and down with it. You know what I'm saying? He had 867, then he had his monster year, then he went back down, and then he went farther down, then he went back up for his fifth year. But I definitely can understand what you're saying, because his influence probably does go a long way into why he's so famous. I mean, the dude had a movie about him. I even heard somebody try to make that as the case of why he should be in it, but – you know, I just countered with, you know, Vince Papale had a movie, too, and he barely made the team. You know? FOH with the movie talk. And the movie was more about Brian Piccolo anyway.
Field goal kicking. But, I get you guys' point. I just think that in the grand scheme of things, Austin mentioned some good players like Ricky Waters, you know, Fred Davis, and those guys didn't have the impact. Again, my criteria with the narrative, like, we can tell the whole story of football and never have to bring up Fred Taylor.
But the impact.
I don't know if you can tell the story without the quote for who for what. I don't know.
That may be true for who for what. I get Ricky in the Hall of Fame, but.
Well, the impact of Gale Sayers was more so outside of the game than on the field in a lot of, like. When I look at like a Fred Taylor or a Ricky Waters, and I'm not saying that they deserve to be in the Hall, but what I'm saying is, as I look at their impact on on the game, and it's
what
actual
impact did they have on the game?
Field, huh?
Oh, you mean on the field? Okay, I think you said impact on the game itself.
Yeah, on the field. On the field contribution.
Before you even say that, be awesome. Let me ask you this question. If you can have Gale Sayers, Fred Taylor, or Ricky Waters at their peak, forget injury, forget all that, at their peak of their game, and you're building a team for that 1 year at their peak, who would you take?
That's a bad question, because I'm going to answer you this way. I'd take Barry Foster.
Harold?
That's not what I asked you, though.
He didn't ask you about
that.
Yeah,
I thought Barry
Foster
answering,
put
that's
up
what,
1,700 at his peak.
But he didn't ask you
mean?
About
that. That's not what I asked you. I said.
Yo, but that peak, I guess the question is a fallacy.
Well, forget the statistics. I'm talking about the ability. When you look at the guy's ability to play the game, and you're sitting there building a team for this one season, you can have Gale Sayers at his peak, at his prime. You can have Ricky Waters at his prime or Fred Taylor at his prime. Who are you putting in your team for that 1 year? Forget statistics of what their prime was in terms of numbers.
I'm gonna avoid the question like B. Austin, but not in such a weird way. I'm gonna avoid it by saying, like, I can't really answer because I didn't really get to see I didn't really get to see Gale Sayers outside of highlights. I'm not saying they just built him up off highlights, but we can make anybody look great if we just take their best plays. So that's all I've seen is his best plays. Yeah, I've seen Fred Taylor, you know, get it in. I've seen him struggle. Same thing with Ricky Waters. You know, I didn't see what Gale Sayers was doing when they weren't showing his 70-yard touchdown runs and stuff like that. So that's a difficult question for me. But, I mean, I'm going to stick with it, but I do understand the other side. So it's not like a big FOH. And it's pending anyway because since we're split, you know, we need three votes since it's usually five of us. So we need to get the opinions of the other two brothers before we can even make a judgment on Gale Sayers. See, the last time we did this, I think it was with Urlacher, we all agreed. So that's the majority anyway. So we didn't really have to wait for those guys. So we'll get back to this, and we'll see.
And it's interesting you say that because Urlacher is a Chicago Bear, right? Now, if we're talking to any just person who's a football fan or watches football, and we ask them to give the greatest Bears of all time. They'd probably bring up Gale Sayers before Urlacher, which is funny.
Yeah, they're probably going to bring up, like, Sayers, Butkus, Peyton, Ditka.
And then maybe.
Who?
The Fridge should get on that list.
Oh,
stretch, y'all. It's a stretch.
Fridge ain't getting on that list.
Yeah. He might go to WWF Hall of Fame.
So this is pending. The next time, which might be next week when we got a full house around the round table. We'll revisit it real quick just to get the other two guys their opinions, and we'll see if Gale Sayers will make it into the War Room Sports Hall of Fame. Now that, you know, I'm through with my blasphemy because I'm pretty sure that's what everybody's out there screaming, let's talk about some hot topics. Of course, hot topics are brought to you by Audible. Is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? We'll try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. That's what I do. All you got to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the very same time. And Jimmy, you just got a new book to be read to you.
Man, you already know, yo. I just got on Audible. I just got that Phil Jackson book, so I'm about to jump into that and hear Phil slander some people. And I just want to say, Phil Jackson, I didn't start the book yet. He kind of, like, defecated on every coach. Yo, the name of the book is called 11 Rings, and the cover of the book has a picture of each one of his championship rings. Yo, that man has to be tough and greasy on the low. But anyway,
there's a lot of coaches, even if they read the book, you know, because the coach is old head, so they probably still read physical books. They're probably going to rip the cover off and just read the book, you know, all jacked up.
And by the way,
because they don't want to see that. They don't want to see that.
I just want to say, Dev, through that audibletrial.com/warroomsports, you can actually get the Phil Jackson book for free because, you know, it gives you a free book for the – it gives you a free trial. And the free trial, you can get the Phil Jackson book, and it's up to you whether you want to continue or not. So I'm going to bring that up.
Y'all hear that. So if y'all didn't get that web address, I'm not going to read it again. Ask us on Twitter, Facebook, chat room. And we'll write it down for you. That way you can copy and paste it, and we ain't got to keep repeating ourselves. All right, so NHL, of course, we're into the conference finals. We had two game sevens. Chicago versus L.A., that's the number one seed in the Western Conference versus the number five seed in the Western Conference. And then in the Eastern Conference, we got Pittsburgh against Boston. Pittsburgh is the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and Boston is the number four seed in the Eastern Conference. So it's like the Kings surprised everybody by winning the Cup last year, but, you know, they're trying to make another run to be right back where they were. They had a Game 7 scare. Chicago, the Blackhawks also had a Game 7 scare. I don't know if you guys remember how hot Chicago started the season off. Their little streak was like the hottest news in the NHL, even though it was a shortened season, and it wasn't really a win streak, but it was a point streak. And those who don't know hockey or understand hockey are not probably didn't know what the hell that meant and was wondering why it was so impressive. Rutgers, man. why can't Rutgers get it right, man? As everyone may have heard, they hired a new athletic director, Julie Herman, and seems as if Rutgers once again didn't do their due diligence because for the same type of reasons they just fired their coach and athletic director, they hired another one who at her last stop had similar problems. Now, before we get into this a little bit, I'm going to just read off from this Sports Illustrated article the last few months in Rutgers history. One, they kept basketball coach Mike Rice after a video surfaced of him throwing basketballs at players and calling them offensive names. Two, they fired Mike Rice when that video went public. So, you know, you know how that goes. It was cool when they swept it under a rug. As soon as it goes public, they got to fire him. Three, they fired athletic director Tim Pernetti for keeping Rice in the first place, even though President Robert Barkey was aware that the video and approved Rice's suspension. Four, they hired Rutgers graduate Eddie Jordan to replace Rice, only to discover Jordan is not a graduate in the sense of, you know, he didn't graduate from college, which is not a big deal when you're coaching, but the fact is, you know, it's on his resume. He's running around saying that he graduated. And then when he was asked, he said he didn't remember. It must have been some kind of situation with his credits. He didn't remember. It was a long time ago. How the hell do you not know when you didn't graduate college? Come on,
man.
Eddie Jordan, man. And number five, what we're talking about here, they hired Julie Herman as its new athletic director. She was highly regarded at Louisville, but she had a lot of red flags. So what's the deal with Rutgers, man? Like, why do they keep dropping the ball?
You coach to win the game.
Yo, I think it's one of those situations where now if the spotlight's on them, anybody that they bring aboard, people are going to, like, find anything and everything in their history. So they have to, you know,
but why
be aware
don't they?
Of that.
Why is
yeah,
the Rutgers
that's what I'm saying.
Stuff. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So they're going to be aware of that when making a decision that doesn't matter who you pick, they're going to be like, you know, their whole past will be looked at like a fine-tooth comb. That's why you should just hire a creep like me who will tell you from the door that I got a lot of stuff in my past you don't want coming out. See?
Yeah, like, you know, live with it. Take it or leave it. But they said when she quit as Tennessee's volleyball coach because every player on the team complained that she called them all whores, alcoholics, and learning disabled. They signed a letter saying that it was. They all signed a letter saying it was unanimously an irreconcilable issue, and you know they no longer wanted her as coach. They also said she had to pay $150,000 when former assistant coach Ginger Heinlein sued her. Now, she sued her because Herman told her not to have a child in the video taken at their wedding. She told her, I don't know why she told her that, but it was like a sex discrimination case. But for some reason, she told this lady not to have kids. I don't know. It was because she wanted
yeah,
her to be at work all the time.
On.
Yeah, it's a lot
it's
going,
going
on, and I don't understand.
Video.
I don't know why she says the stuff she says or does the things she does. But Rutgers is an institution right now, state university, who they don't need this kind of publicity right now because they've had this kind of publicity over the last, you know, 6 months or so, and I don't understand why they keep dropping the ball on these things.
Listen,
they're going to learn their lesson.
Everything ain't been the same at Rutgers since, like, you know, Metal Soprano started going there. So, you know, they need to really get it together.
Or since Iverson called his basketball team Nappy-Headed Hoes.
Yeah, that too. That too.
Rutgers.
Yo.
She called them hoobas and alcoholics and learning disabled.
Yo, that's her team, though. How are you supposed to want to play for you when you just disrespected them that?
Yeah, I mean, just like Mike Rice.
Like,
last night at practice, you just hit me in the head with a basketball. And then now you're telling me to set a screen? Like, come on, man. That's 4 ways,
yeah, it's out of control, man.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's really
yeah.
out of control.
So
right,
the funny thing is I think that now in society, due diligence with social media and with a culture of I don't want to say tattletaling, but a culture of sometimes bringing things out, due diligence has taken on a whole new meaning. And so all of these things are going to come out. We know back in the day, old coaches towed the line. Bobby Knight got out of the game when he realized, I take my belt off in practice, and I smack these kids, and I get results. Y'all don't like it, I got to go. A lot of coaches kind of have that, quote-unquote, Bobby Knight approach, and that doesn't work in 2013, man. It doesn't work.
Nah. Soft, dude.
Soft. I mean, but a Bobby Knight approach is okay, but it's is getting – some of this stuff is a little worse. Like, Bobby Knight would scream at you. He would curse at you. I'm not really sure
that's
if
Bobby
Knight
Bobby
was
Knight
calling
hit.
You faggots and
that's
whores.
The stuff we
and
saw
alcohol.
Exactly. No, Bobby Joe. That's because there was no camera in there. Lord knows the kind of stuff Bobby Knight did. Read some of the books from his former players. Bobby Knight was, like, DDTing him. You know what I mean? Happy birthday, Jake. He's in there, like, putting in work, man. Listen, man, the bottom line is, as a society, man, we're a bunch of suckers now, man. You know, it is what it is.
Who was an alcoholic?
Can't take that.
All right, so the money team, Floyd Mayweather Jr. has signed on to fight Canelo Alvarez, the junior middleweight champion, September 14th at, I believe, MGM Grand in Vegas. Alvarez, of course, is 42-0-1 with 30 knockouts, and Floyd is actually moving up to 152 to take this fight. Floyd, we all know, is undefeated at 44. You know, with 26 knockouts. What do you guys think about this? I mean, this is people complain about Floyd ducking and not taking on the best competitors in their prime. Well, Alvarez is basically in his prime, and he is the top fighter in that division. I saw a stat this morning that said Floyd hasn't fought the top fighter in their respective division. Well, he's only done it once in the last 10 years. So,
my man been
ducking
that work for 10 years.
Considering he's undefeated, you know, do you think this is risky? Because I hear a lot of people saying this is a risky fight for him for his legacy. What do you guys think about that?
The challenge here is the measuring stick with which we measure Canelo Alvarez. Has he truly been tested? I'm a Canelo Alvarez supporter. He's got power in both hands.
You're a supporter of anybody who signs the dotted line to fight Floyd.
Of course. But independent of that, we've seen him fight before, Dev, and he's entertaining because he's old school. He's very athletic and very talented. He doesn't move. His head movement isn't really paused. That isn't really what Floyd's is, but he doesn't get hit a lot either. Power to knock you out in both hands, good footwork, strong guy.
I think he gets hit enough.
being objective, I'll say that this is, from a perception standpoint, this is probably the most risk that Floyd has taken in a decade. But I don't get the sense that this is – man, I don't think Al Haymon and Floyd and his team allow Floyd to take any risk of true loss. And this isn't the fight that the world wanted to see, so he's still a coward in my eyes. But,
according to boxing –
this is a fight.
But according to boxing, this is a fight that people have been wanting to see for a while. Now, I'm being a little facetious when I say that because, you know, if there was a big fight that everybody wanted to see, you know, once that's not going to happen, they'll throw you something that is a good fight, that is a big fight, but they'll try to tell you, you know, people, you know, you've been waiting for this for a while when they know that's really not true. But it is a big fight. And as far as risk goes, like, I try to tell people all the time, I think the whole if Floyd loses, you know, it'll mess up his legacy. I think that whole thing is FUBAR. I think Floyd's legacy is basically set because right now he's 36 years old. So he's coming into each fight, and this is not anything personal with Floyd. This is just with older fighters. They're coming in to their fights with an already built-in excuse of age. So it's not going to be any shame for one of these old guys to take a loss to a young lion. Look at Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins is in his 40s, and he's still beating dudes up. And his legacy is growing. But every time Bernard Hopkins takes an L, everybody just looks the other way because it's like, well, he's old. You know what I'm saying? That's
what old
dogs
ain't really
do. But when he beats somebody, it's like, you know, Bernard is the truth.
I think that's different with Floyd, though, because of the fact that he has no blemishes. And also how, you know, he talks about it constantly. Like, you know, that's part of his marketing. I mean, it's the money team. And,
but, Jim, I think it's in his head. It might do something to him, But I don't think a loss would change the way boxing looks at Floyd Mayweather. You know what I'm saying? I think it
I think it's really important to finish.
Well, it depends who we're talking about. If we're talking about boxing itself, or are we talking about the general public? Because the general public,
the general public is going to be unfair because it's not necessarily representative of boxing. True boxing enthusiasts.
Because Floyd with the general public, it's a love-hate relationship. The people who love him are going to be more on the, I'm not saying they're being objective, but they're going to be more on the objective side of, okay, this doesn't do anything to his legacy because, come on, the man has 44 wins and this is his first loss. The people who hate him is going to act like he was never good if he lost a fight.
On the flip side of that, the thing about Canelo Alvarez is right now, like when I'm in the barbershop, this is the fight people want to see. It's funny because Manny kind of got
the fight people
want to
see now.
Because he got knocked out so bad that I haven't.
Leonard Ellerby said this is the fight people have been wanting to see for a long time, and that's not true.
This is the fight people want to see now, no doubt. Canelo Alvarez is 42-0 himself. Like he's 42-0 himself. So
you know, he's
no slouch, but he's also one of those Mexican fighters who they hype up. Now I'm not saying that on no racial type thing, but. It is what it is when it comes to boxing. At the end of the day, on a flip side, if Floyd dominates this fight, that'll just like you know keep adding to his legacy. Like if he dominates this fight,
and personally, I still think he will because Canelo Alvarez, as good as he is, he's still like you know he's just he does. It's not a lot of whole lot of movement. You know, I've heard a lot of people refer to him as flat footed. You know what I'm saying? So. He's going to stand there and try to get his brawl on a little bit. And Floyd's just going to fight the defensive fight that he usually fights, you know, get out of the way, hit you with stuff that's going to score points, and he's probably going to win on the decision. So I think it's going to be the same type of thing. But this will be better for Floyd because no one will have an excuse afterwards to say, well, you didn't fight anybody. Well, this is the best.
Well, you know, they're going to go back to, well, you didn't fight Pac-Man when you should have.
That last fight was really bad, and I want to say this. When I looked at the fight, it was so bad that Floyd looked like he was in a time machine. Dude looked so sharp, it looked like it was 2006, 2005. But the guy he was fighting, as you said, there was a stiff. He was flat-footed, no movement. Floyd would run in by round eight. Floyd was like, yo, I'm tired of holding my hands up. I got to save my strength for these racks that I'm going to carry to the strip club. So he stopped putting his hands up to defend himself. Dude couldn't hit him. So I don't know whether Floyd is falling off because based on what I saw, that was the sharpest Floyd Mayweather I've seen in 5 years. Like, but I don't know whether that was because he was fighting somebody that was lesser than his sparring opponents. So I don't know what to expect with Canelo. I don't. Like, the age thing doesn't even seem like it's a factor because he doesn't look like he's falling off.
Yeah. I mean, when you're that good of a fighter, technically, you know what I'm saying, age, because, I mean, he has 26 knockouts, but you still don't look at Floyd as, you know, just some hard-punching knockout artist or anything like that. He's always been a smart fighter, technical fighter, And when you have that with you, age catches up to everyone eventually. But when you're technical like that, you know, it takes a little while longer for age to actually catch up to you. So that's why he still looks as dominant as he looks. So, I mean, I personally think this will be no different. But the fact that it is Canelo Alvarez, you know, people who really dislike Floyd aren't going to have that good of an excuse besides the fact of maybe saying, okay, well, they – handpicked an opponent who, you know, Floyd's style could shine on. That might be the only thing that you're able to do. So let's go to the digital stream.
You're a Floyd apologist. How do you explain him ducking the top contender for 10 years?
Well, first off, I'm not a Floyd apologist. I'm just one of those people who I wasn't a Pacquiao fan. Let's put it that way. So people try to make me a Floyd guy. Just because I didn't like Pacquiao. So yeah, I'm not
those
a Floyd
were the only two names floating around. So if Jimmy's dissing Pacquiao, people automatically
think. It's sort of like you're not allowed to like Biggie and Pac. You can't like Jay and Nas. You know what I mean? Like you can't like both of them.
And if you just like one, you got to love the other one, which is, you know.
Yeah, that's how it is. So people put me in that box. I'm not a Floyd apologist, but the homie wants to talk some boxing. Get to the homie for real.
All right, I've seen plenty of dudes with two dudes in the fight. I don't like neither one of them. So, as a matter of fact, on June 22nd, I'm going up to the Barclays for that Adrian Broner fight. I don't really care for him and the dude he's fighting. Like, I really don't care for him. You know, not care for him. I don't care about him. Like, so if he gets stretched, that's on him. But let's go to the digital, to the homie Varee out in D.C. area. What's up, Varee?
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Chilling.
Just wanted to get in on this boxing conversation.
What are your thoughts?
So you said you're going to see Paulie Maligiani. Right. But before we get to that, Paulie Maligiani versus Adrian Broner.
That's
the fight you're going to?
Yeah, nothing special.
I think Maligiani's going to get demolished.
Yeah, they're actually... The fight is really a nothing fight, but they're talking so much trash to each other that they're actually making people pay attention. Yeah, the trash talking has gotten out of hand. So you see it all the time in boxing. They might do all of that just to sell it, and then after the fight, they might be hugging and kissing on each other. So I don't know, man. But
Maligiani might as well keep that suit on and stay in the Showtime booth.
And you see, I didn't try to take a stab at his name either, so I'm glad you did that for me.
but anyway, B. Austin, so you said Floyd's been ducking for 10 years?
Uh-oh,
yeah.
Get him.
You got to give him a little more credit than that.
Now get him.
I'm from the school where you fight the best opponent in front of you. You make no excuses. We can go to Bruce Lee, but he wasn't in boxing, so what are we left with? We left with Muhammad Ali. We left with the Mexican. And as bad as I tried to hate Oscar De La Hoya because of his feminine tendencies, I had to respect dude, man, because he would fight you, Varee. If you call Oscar out, Oscar come fight you.
Here's a point, Varee, before you even tear his head off, I just want to say this, that the difference is business is involved.
Be happy.
Oscar got the chunk of the change because he was such a big draw, and no one kind of disputed that. Floyd has to still fight to get, well, not anymore, but in terms of Pacquiao, the business wasn't right, at least that's what they said. The business wasn't right, so he couldn't get the money he wanted. You know what I mean? So it's like, I understand what you're saying about you fighting whoever's
in front
of you.
Jimmy, now you're an intelligent dude, and you know the boxing game, so I'm not going to let our listeners ride with that. I'm just going to throw one name out there. Do you think that Al Haymon is going to not let the money be right?
You have to figure out that a lot of it was because Pacquiao wasn't controlling his own destiny, so to speak. So he had guys controlling him
Bob
who would
Harum,
rather him not even take
Bob
the fight.
Bob Arum and Al Haymon hate each other.
So I mean, that's why I'm saying business gets involved. So it's deeper than just, hey, I want to fight him. He's the best out there. I'm going to fight him. Like, the business has to get done. And, you know, that's kind of what keeps boxing where it is now and why the UFC was able to even gain the ground they're getting. Now, they're not as big as boxing, but the reason they were able to gain the ground they did is because of how business is done. But, Varee, I'll let you chop him up, though.
My thing is, I mean, if you beat Arturo Gatti, Zab Judah, Shane Mosley, that was at the end of his career, but Ricky Hatton, I mean, Chico Corrales.
Ricky Hatton's a stiff. He's
you
not
know
good.
Ricky Hatton
was
a stiff.
He wasn't considered a stiff
until Floyd beat the trash out of him. And then
Pacquiao
knocked
him
off.
I'm not fooled.
But that was when Ricky Hatton was coming off the win over Costa Zoo. Was it Costa Zoo or who had he?
Yeah.
I think he had just beat somebody.
Yeah, it was Costa Zoo.
Yeah, at the time, you know, we were thinking that this is the Irish guy, you know, he was making a name for himself. So I'm just throwing the people out there that Floyd beat. You know, I can't name anybody that he really ducked.
Everyone
you can only fight.
Zab isn't nice.
Zab isn't at the time, Zab was nice because Floyd had to move up to fight Zab, I think, at welterweight.
It's funny how you diss these people, but you got to understand that at the time he fought them, they were nice. Like, Zab, you're saying Zab's not nice now. In Zab's last fight, he actually showed some heart. But, I mean, it is what it is. Like, some of these guys, you say, well, he's no name. But, I mean, come on, man. Like, if you look at Muhammad Ali, right, and you talk about, okay, he fought George Foreman, Joe Frazier. Like, if you go through the list of most of the guys he fought, you probably sit there and say, they're stiffs. Who did Tyson fight?
Pinklin Thomas.
Bro, give me all the great fights that Tyson had. Give me all his great opponents. Give me all
Bone
Tyson's great opponents. Bone Crusher Smith. Come on,
Pinklin. Washed up
Larry Holmes. Give me all Tyson's great opponents. Since
Carl,
you know, I mean, like,
Carl the Truth
the
Williams.
Day.
He was the truth.
Come on, man. You can't do that,
but, I think he did fight every top contender that was around at the time, besides Pacquiao. And Pacquiao, depending on which side you talk to, you'll get a different excuse. Floyd says they couldn't make the fight because the money wasn't right. You know, I mean, you know, we just don't know the truth to that on who was really ducking that fight. But that fight never happened.
It went from
I just don't think it's fair to say in 10 years he hasn't fought a top contender because he fought everybody that was available.
Yeah, you gained stats, right?
No, the stat, it wasn't necessarily top contender. It was just like the top contender in the prospective division.
The top, right.
So he may have fought top contenders, but not the top contender in whatever division he was fighting in at the time.
Here's the thing, though, a lot of things the people say is
that he didn't fight, like the big names that he fought, he really didn't fight them in their primes. Yeah.
I mean, you can make that case for the Oscar fight, the Shane fight, maybe the Gotti fight. I don't know.
Shane wasn't so.
Arturo Gotti. To be honest with you, see, the difference between me, Varee, and most haters that you'll run into is I'm objective, and I give him the benefit of your talent. I think the dude is one of the most talented and skilled boxers I've ever seen with my own two eyes. So
right.
I don't even understand the cowardice. Like, I don't understand.
See, but honestly though, just from talking to you, to be honest, I honestly don't even think you consider him a coward. I think that his antics and the way he carries himself, they bother you so much. The cooning bothers you so much that you, like, take it over to the sport. Like, you just don't like the guy. Because, I mean,
him hitting a woman makes him a coward, so I can never be wrong with that.
See, that's what I'm saying. But it has nothing to do with your opinion of him has nothing to do with his talent as a boxer.
Him hitting a woman doesn't make him a coward.
I don't even think you really believe he ducked anybody, because outside of the Pacquiao fight, which we really don't know the truth about, there isn't anyone he ducked. I mean, you look at fight
who's
in front of you at the time they come up.
You want to make a fight. Listen, if you want to make a fight, you make a fight.
In that case, Mike Tyson's a coward because he ducked Lennox Lewis. And he ended up fighting Lennox Lewis when he had no other choice but to, and then got his boot stretched. But when they were in their prime, he didn't want to fight him. I mean, it's the truth, though. I mean, this is what boxing is. It's all about the business.
Duck
it was
Lennox.
A win for Tyson to fight Lennox
honest,
Lewis before he
your
won.
Your honest opinion of what Mike is, listen, Mike can't duck Mike.
That's his problem now.
Out his own way.
That's his problem now, but they couldn't get the business done to make the Lennox Lewis Tyson fight when it wouldn't have been the biggest fight in boxing.
Who represented Lennox at the time?
At the time? At the time, I'm not even sure. I think it's the same thing that represents Pacquiao.
Probably Don King.
I think it was Bob Arum.
I think it may have been Bob Arum.
It was top rank.
It may have been. I'm not sure. I can't, don't quote me on that 100%, but it may have been Bob Arum.
Because Bob Arum's not cool with anybody. Like Don King doesn't mess with Bob Arum either.
Nobody messes with Bob Arum, but that's my point. My point is, so it's deeper than just saying he's scared to fight somebody.
You look
at back in the day, the Ray Leonards and the Haglers. I mean, Ray Leonard had to step up and fight Hagler eventually, the super fight in 1987.
Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, people duck fights. Ray Leonard didn't want to fight Aaron Pryor. And he'll tell you to this day, no, he wasn't fighting the
Hulk. Ray was
going to Don't use him. Don't use him. He don't like Ray Leonard either.
The Austin does not like
Ray
Leonard
either.
Anyway.
Oh, no, I'm a I love Ray Leonard. I mean, but you can't really
talk about
credit Ray Leonard.
We also don't like
because,
Ray Leonard either. So.
Okay. I mean, but Ray Leonard. I mean, Ray Leonard fought Durant. Like he fought all the guys they put in front of him. Even though he didn't want to fight, you know, there was a few fights out there that he really didn't take. But you know,
he shouldn't have taken that Terry Norris fight. He was too old for that. He beat the.
Yeah, he was definitely too old in the Camacho fight. Those don't even count, man. He was done. I don't know why he did that.
But, all right, well,
anyway, that's all I wanted to say,
it.
Man. I'm not even the biggest Floyd fan, but, you know, I just don't.
Yo, I feel the Vereen. Me and you in the same boat, homie. Like, I'm not even a big Floyd fan, but I'm not a Pacquiao fan either. I just hate the whole
you
talk of
you love Floyd, Jimmy. Stop fronting.
No, I really don't, though, but I really don't.
Every
all right, man, let me get to these next calls, man. Thanks for your
call,
man.
But,
all right,
no problem, man. No problem, fella.
All right, let's go to Naeem real quick. He's been holding on the line for a minute. Naeem, what's going on?
Ain't nothing. Laker Nation number one, first of all, and all
or
foremost. Laker Nation. I'm always on Laker Nation. And I'm still LeBron.
No doubt.
Here.
Shout out to Dwight Howard.
He's baby food. He's baby food. I got to watch my language. I'm moving up in corporate America. So I got to watch my language on the air. Now, getting to the Bob Arum, I think if y'all listen to episode like last year before I was working around these people and they paying me well, I spoke with him and y'all kind of cut me off the air. But you know that man does not want them people to make that money because that fight with Pacquiao and Bradley was the worst. Okay? He robbed them. And let's be realistic here, okay? I'm a Floyd fan. I ain't going front. I like the man. He backs it up. But this fight right here is going to be his toughest fight he's seen yet. I like the boy Canelo. I really think Floyd is going to move around, but if he get hit by one of them punches by that kid, it might be trouble.
Because he definitely throws bombs. Floyd is just so hard to hit. But if he can get a lucky one in, say, like Shane Mosley did,
it's over.
It's going to be different from when Shane hurt him. Shane hurt him.
Shane had him quick walking for a minute.
Shane had him. I remember I was watching it. I almost fainted.
Shane was so happy.
He's about to be out.
Shane was so happy that he's cold and he forgot.
Let me ask you this. How does Canelo dropping down to 152 affect his power, though?
I don't think it's going to affect him. You got to remember, this kid's father, if I'm not mistaken, is like some cartel dude, okay? He's been boxing all his life, okay? And you got to remember one thing about the Mexican boxers or Spanish boxers. You got to kill them in the ring. You understand me? You got to kill them, man. You got to kill them. And going on the other note, I hope these Heat fans are listening. I want Indiana to beat them so bad tonight because of the simple fact. No, I'm being honest with you. Indiana can beat them if they play inside, outside. Feed the ball to the big man, draw the double team, and kick it back out. They're young,
To your point, Naeem, Hibbert can't be tired because he don't get no yams.
No, and he's doing his thing, though.
He probably gets them at the last game the way he was balling.
He's playing. I mean, but give him the ball. They're going to get the double team, kick it out. And the other thing that I saw, I felt so bad for George when he took LeBron to the hole, dunked on Birdman. I was so happy. But then LeBron came back and hit that three. I didn't even want to watch no more.
Then he shook his hand.
Then he shook his hand like, you got me, but I got you back here. You know what I mean? Like, not
that,
the next
that
play
right there,
or
that
two
That right there is a microcosm of today's NBA. Could you imagine if that was like Magic and Bird? They would have been like ready to fight as opposed to shaking hands during the game.
Yeah, but see.
Y'all going to be surprised at this because y'all know how I feel about everybody buddying up. But
I know you thought it was good sportsmanship.
That moment, for some reason, I didn't have that much of a problem with. Mainly because LeBron kind of initiated it. Which kind of told me, like, I got respect for you, young bro. Like, I like what you just did. Like, because I'm not going to front. As much as I don't enjoy the buddy-buddy stuff, like, I've been on the court like that where, you know,
yeah.
somebody who was supposed to be, maybe because I'm thinking of it from Paul George's perspective, you know what I'm saying? I've been like the young boy who was out there showing what I got, and the old head or the dude who's supposed to be the man kind of respects you because you're getting up.
But
how would you guys have felt if Paul George would have flagged him and walked to his bench?
I'd have enjoyed that too.
He didn't instantly
become
my favorite player.
I didn't instantly become my favorite player. It's the playoffs. This ain't ready.
Yeah, so I kind of think
but
either way,
thing,
you know what I'm saying?
Either way, my thing was this right here. Like, you know, you yammed on me, but here, take this. I respect you, you know? You know what I mean? But take this three.
Because I think
because
it was like
about it.
Yeah, I think it was like a I respect you, let's get it on type of hand slap.
Exactly,
it's not really like, man,
exactly.
I love you, I want to be your
let's,
buddy.
Yeah,
oh,
like, let's get it on.
I want to
see
like
all
you
these
shouldn't even be
fans.
Looking at the other team unless you're guarding them.
Yeah,
I want to see all these. I want to see all these LeBron fans if they don't make it to the championship or don't win, if they still won't represent. Because one thing about this purple and gold, win, lose, or draw, we represent. Because
well,
we will be back.
See, it's difficult because I don't necessarily think. Like, I'm a firm believer that the Heat don't really have real fans, and I'm talking about even in Miami. Like, even
no,
the
LeBron
fans in Miami who never – I mean, they don't deserve that team. They don't even show up to every game.
No, they really don't.
With Wade,
no.
LeBron, and Bosh, and Ray Allen,
no.
and all the superstars they have on the team. So I really
no.
think if they end up losing, it's not going to be like you guys with the Lakers or us with the Sixers, you know, the little bit of time when they're good.
Could you imagine if LeBron,
like, when they
Bosh,
lose,
and Wade play
like,
for the Sixers?
Yeah, it's like we're hurt when they lose. And we're hurt for a minute.
Can you ask one question for me? Can
I think those
question?
People
will
just move on
listening.
To the next thing, man.
I hope he's listening, my man B Street, Brent Easley. Is he a Sixers fan?
Yeah. Well, he'd be trying
he's
to
a Don Holiday fan.
He's a Sixers fan, right?
Yeah.
He better not ever talk to me about Kobe Bryant and the Lakers again. He's a Sixers fan. Okay. I hope you're listening, Brent. Be easy.
Man.
I love you like a brother of a different mother. But
people be talking. People always say that, like, being a Sixers fan destroys our credibility. Come on, man.
Oh, man, listen. I support no Philadelphia team at all, except for the Phillies, because they let you know they cheat and they're going to do what they're going to do until they start spending money. The Eagles, I never was an Eagles fan. Y'all remember me in Ivy Leaf? I wore the Chicago Bear gear and the Lakers gear. I've never been to a Philadelphia sportsman team. But I'm going to let y'all go. But
cool.
I'm going to tell you now, I hope Floyd don't get knocked out, man. I got a funny feeling.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about that more as
out.
It comes up. We'll see how training is going and everything once they really get into it.
All right.
We'll talk
you'll
about
never
it.
Hear,
right,
you'll
now.
Be surprised. You're surprised to hear me say this. Let's go Indiana tonight. Let's get it over with tonight, y'all. Come on, Indiana.
They ain't got the purple, but they got all the right, gold.
Y'all.
All right, man.
All right.
All right, before we talk about this, these playoffs, we got. Let's go to Tobias out in Phoenix. He's been waiting for a minute too. Tobias, what's going on? You're in the war room.
What's going on? Y'all remember me? Roll Tide, baby. What's up?
Oh yeah, roll damn Tide.
Hey, yeah, I'm at work anyway. Your plane take off, forgive me, but I had to check
no,
in. Now, as a disappointed Bulls fan who disappointed these fans that hate Derrick Rose, I want to tell them to suck a lemon. And as a fan, fuck you on the Heat, I say this. I'm an ejector fan.
Mm-hmm.
If these dudes think keeping Luol Deng is a championship piece, they're crazy. I'm just being honest here. I like the guy. He played with that hurt wrist, but you cannot depend on him for 20 points a game you need him, you know. And he played his good years, you know. But if you could get somebody, and they also say it's Banco, this European guy, but we already know, I don't think he Dirk or Petrovic, you know. Remember back in the day, Petrovic.
Is he even Tony Kukoc?
I don't know. They said he won the EuroLeague trophy, but all the guys he beat out were washed out in the NBA.
I was about to say, most of the dudes who come over here from there won the EuroLeague trophy, so I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. But I don't know. I mean, I like Luol Deng as well. The question is, like, can you have a championship team with him being your second best player?
That's
and
the problem.
I mean, he does. I mean, he plays both ways. He plays defense. You know, he's pretty good on offense. So I don't know what it is about Luol Deng, but I kind of understand when Bulls fans kind of, you know, think like he's not the guy that can be, you know, be the second guy to lead them to a title. But the Bulls, the problem with the Bulls is like while this team is in its, you know, respective prime as a team, it's like, are we going to ever see them at full strength to know whether or not they could really challenge for a championship? Because, you know, they had their
Carlos
pain year, they lost to Miami.
Carlos
but
Boozer
then, you know, the next year comes, they're supposed to be, they're the number one seed, Derrick Rose gets hurt. Then he doesn't play all year this year, but they still show so much heart in the playoffs, and even though they lost in five, they still took the defending champs' best shot, you know, gave out a few shots of their own, and at least made the series interesting. So I'm like, if Derrick Rose is there and Heinrich is there, you know, if the team is at full strength, then, you know, maybe Luol Deng is good enough to be that piece on the championship team. But
they just need to re-sign Nate.
Yeah, they don't have enough money. You know what, though? No, see, when you watch the Pacers, and this is another thing about being objective, David West has his advantage over Battier. Unlike Boozer, he's not trying to do 18-foot fadeaway channeling his inner Patrick Ewing. He's taking him through the hole and shooting over him. That's
see, he may be the one that you need to be complaining about. Now, I think
Boozer gets
a terrible rap from Chicago fans, which I think sometimes you guys may overblow it. But I do understand what you're saying. Like, in a situation like that, he's not going to take Shane down into the post and abuse him. He is going to shoot fadeaway jumpers and stuff like that. He has a nice jumper, but that's not what you want to see from your big man, especially when he has a mismatch. And that seems to be, you know, Boozer's M.O. Like, he wants to play a finesse game. When you look at him, you know, you look like you're about to wrestle with a bear, and then he starts shooting jump shots. So.
You know what, and I'll say this before, because I know y'all might be up against it, but the Heat, most of these Heat fans probably didn't know Shaq played on the team. But anyway, you know, but the thing is with them, everybody's thinking they're so unbeatable. They caught so many breaks the past 2 years, and you can't fault them for that. Because look at it, 2 years in a row, the Bulls been injured. You know, Derrick Rose been injured 2 years in a row. The Celtics, you know, they ran out of gas, you know. OKC, they played to their hand. They're not invincible. They're, besides LeBron and Bosh, they're an old team. And Wade,
I'm about
to say, honest,
even on the other side, when you say they catch breaks, I think even on the other side, I think the only two teams who probably could have gave them a run in the finals this year, if they make it, was probably OKC and the Grizzlies.
Yep.
But,
yep.
You know.
Yeah.
It seems like everything lines up for this team, and then they're good enough to go out and make it happen. So, hey, you need a little bit of luck when you're doing this as well, and they get it.
And before I go, I'll say this. Two quick things. First, they should look into trading Dwayne Wade in the offseason while they still can. Find a sucker. The Phoenix Suns out here, they're the ultimate suckers. They'll take anything. But and also, when everybody talk about this 70, I'm a big Bulls fan. They love trying to compare everyone to 72-win teams. They sleep on those first three championship teams when they had young Horace Grant. People forget how good he was as a young player. But,
yeah.
Hey, but thanks for taking my call. You guys take it easy.
All right, you too, man. Thanks for checking in.
Roll Tide, baby.
Roll damn Tide.
Roll damn Tide. I'll say that, boy.
All right. So, Jimmy, man, everybody done segued us on their own, so we might as well get into this playoff talk.
Man, you already know it's time to talk about the NBA playoffs. And this NBA playoff talk is brought to you by Citrus Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Citrus Smart Radio. Citrus allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, your Android phone. If you happen to have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, you should be tossed in a pit of unfortunate. But while you're down there, you can still listen to The War Room. Go to Stitcher.com/The War Room. That's one word. Use the coupon code The War Room to be entered into a contest to win some money. And remember, the latest episode is always available. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. All 150 episodes. That's right.
Woo!
We're 150 deep at this point. You know what I mean? We put in that work. Anyway,
can't stop, won't stop.
It's time to talk some hoops and listen to one of the worst overrated rappers of all time. It's basketball time.
Oh, yeah, Curtis.
Yo, speaking of, I was listening to the breaks today. I was listening to the breaks today in
the
car. And I was like dying, like, why is this song so long? I'm like, please go up.
Brakes on a train, brakes on a plane, brakes on a...
Bars was weak. Anyway, the San Antonio
Brakes that'll make you a movie star.
Yo,
wait, hey, before y'all get in that, man, just like Jimmy said, man,
Bars.
This is our 150th episode. So, you know, I want to say salute to you, brothers. 150 strong and still going. Let's do this.
Snapping necks, cashing large checks.
Man, yo, I got 500 more episodes left. Man.
Thank you.
What? That ball for life. Anyway,
squad.
The San Antonio Spurs defeated the Memphis Grizzlies.
Defeated.
4-0. Stone cold sweep, y'all. I initially predicted the Grizzlies to win this, just because I thought the Spurs would have a call like they did the last couple of years when they were clearly the better team than some of the teams they lost to, and they had great regular seasons. But to me, honestly, watching this series, Popovich is that guy. It just boils down to they got crazily out coached.
That ball for life.
And I don't even think that the Grizzlies have a bad coach, but Popovich made all the right moves, all the right adjustments.
His Duke game is Harold Pillner-ish.
Even when the Grizzlies made adjustments in terms of how they were fronting Randolph, the Grizzlies made adjustments and, had some success. I believe that was game two. It's like game three, the Spurs came out and flipped the script on them. It's like they just got clearly outcoached, in my opinion. So, shout out to
Popovich. Four life. Squad. I'm that boy, four life. Yeah.
No. Greg Popovich just got that ball, four life award for the week. I feel what you're saying, Jimmy. Along with you guys, I had the Grizzlies winning this in seven. So, I was actually still alive with my pick up until that fourth game. Because, if they ran off four straight, then I would have been a genius. Grizzlies in seven. But it just... It definitely had a lot to do with coaching. Zach Randolph didn't play like himself, on an overall level for the whole series. He had his moments, but you needed Zach to be the same Zach that he was throughout the playoffs leading up to that, and he just wasn't that guy. It seems like everything and everyone we praised about the Grizzlies just didn't show, in this particular series. And, at the end it was too much Greg Popovich, it was too much Tony Parker. And, of course, the team concept of the Spurs, everybody did their part, and they just rolled over, man. I was very surprised. Not surprised in the fact, I wasn't disrespecting the Spurs or anything like that, because they're always they're always around, whether people, still talk about them or think they've fallen off. They prove every year that they're still going to be in the mix somehow. But I don't know if anybody expected a sweep, as well as the Grizzlies were playing up to that point. But it's a matchup there.
The Spurs have come a long way from Vinny Del Negro, Carl Herrera, J.R. Reed, Mario Elie, and Sean Elliott. I think I picked the Grizzlies in six. And the Spurs must have heard me and took it as utter disrespect. Popovich was masterful in devising sets and schemes and plays both ends of the floor to frustrate them and confuse them. One of the things that I noticed is that the Grizzlies coach in his $200 Harold Pillner suit really showed his fandom for Tony Parker. And was caught on camera. Oh, man, Tony Parker, your man parts sure are big, and you showing him this. The Mike Conley boy. Yeah, and he's learning from you. He's learning. Show him some more.
Yeah, he's showing up there to get caught on camera with that.
Yo, Mike Conley had to. Yo, I don't.
Told you, I'd rather LeBron and Paul George slapping hands than see what Lionel Hollins was doing.
Oh, yeah, that was disgusting. Zebo didn't show up. They fronted him, and they always had a double coming on the backside of that. So when you lob the pass over, if it did get over him, you had someone there to strip the ball or hack him and get him frustrated. Mark Gasol disappointed heavily. He didn't show up to be the best center in the world. Dark-skinned Jermaine, he can't cover 4 and 5 people. I mean, Manu was doing his thing at certain points in times. They had him on Kawhi Leonard. They had him on Green. It's just too much. And Leonard and Green are coming into their own. It's not that they stand out, but they do their jobs. They are pop players. They do their job. They hit the open shot. They attack in the rim when necessary and when needed. Good, solid team conceptual defenders. And then what can you say? I mean, the big fundamental, Tim Duncan.
I have a theory real quick. My theory is that you guys heard about all the drama with Tim Duncan and his wife, right? So now that he's in the process of, like, you know, having a split with his wife, his game has gotten better, sort of like Tony Parker did when he split with his wife. So the Spurs, they play better when they, you know, they're yamless. You know what I mean? When they got yams at home, yeah, so when they're yamless, they play better.
Yo, Tony Parker was playing very, very inspired basketball. He was balling.
Yeah. He trying to get a Kardashian. That's what he doing. But
true.
At the end of the day, man, they outplayed the Grizzlies. They got outcoached. They got outplayed. And the Spurs, you know, they look for real. Like, you know, only time will tell to see how they stack up against whoever comes out of the East. But you mentioned how Tony Parker was playing very, very inspired basketball. But with him playing that way, right, do the Spurs have the advantage over any of the teams that they face, they could possibly face, and why?
With the Heat, I think it's a little overrated when people say, you know, the Heat will, like, run them out of the building, because the Spurs aren't actually as old as everybody makes them out to be. Of course, you know, their core players are a little bit older. Tony Parker, I wouldn't even, you know, classify as old. I mean, we're talking Tim Duncan.
He's fast anyway.
And Manu Ginobili. But the way he's playing, I do think, you know, at this point they can compete with pretty much anybody. Whether or not they have the advantage remains to be seen. I think they may have an advantage over Indiana because, you know, Indiana just won't have that size advantage over the Spurs like they have with the Miami Heat. So as well as Roy Hibbert's playing, it will remain to be seen if he can play that well against, you know, at this point, you know, an equal rebounder, probably still a better rebounder in Tim Duncan, and, you know, still a great one-on-one defender. So I don't know. I would probably say they would hold a slight advantage over
Indiana, but not Miami.
Probably not Miami.
All right, now, B. Austin, what's your opinion of that? Same question. Okay.
Matchups.
I mean, is it there?
Yeah,
like,
matchups are there. Tony Parker.
Division?
Yeah, Tony Parker would definitely have the advantage against the Pacers, both starter and their backup. DJ Augustine.
Well, Tony Parker is the best.
I mean, you trying to say Rio
getting
what?
Yeah. I'm about to say he'll have an advantage over the point guards, but I'm talking
about either.
Does his impact give the team an advantage over any of the other teams? And, you know, I'm not really sure about that. But I think they would match up more favorably against the Pacers than they would against the Heat.
Yo, because, I mean, it's always a LeBron factor, you know what I'm saying? Like, Yo, they got
who's
LeBron.
Bench? Who's bench better, the Heat or the Heat or the Spurs? Clearly the Heat.
The Heat's bench is inconsistent, even though, you know, you got some former All-Stars on their bench. The bench is still a little inconsistent. Charlotte Lewis doesn't get
Ray
off.
Allen is, Ray Allen
Ray
is
Allen,
scared again. Or,
Ray Allen does what
yeah.
he does in the play. In my opinion, I don't know who, if anybody out there agrees, but it seems like whenever Ray Allen's slumping, it's usually in the playoffs. So
he needs some cranberry juice.
Uh-oh.
Some cranberry juice.
Maybe he needs to get divorced or something.
Birdman, you know, he'll come off the bench and have his greatest game ever, and then he'll come off the bench and can't stay out of foul trouble. So there's no consistency
there. What happened to that
boy? But
Listen,
people are kind of tripping over Tony Parker right now.
And that actually
was my next question, because we're talking about how great he played in the position that he puts him in to possibly win the finals. But the homie Jalen wrote, he said, Tony Parker is the third best player in the NBA. Now, I'm going to ask you guys, was this a legit statement or was it a prison in the moment talk? Because we've seen
it was definitely a pom-pom. And if you recall, a few years back, Jalen Rose was stopped in an airport with an Altoids case that contained a substance that alters the way you think, speak, and act, and makes you a little mellow and makes you make statements that you shouldn't make. I think he still carries that Altoids case, or at least the contents of it. He was tripping. He was tripping with that statement.
I think it was definitely a prisoner of the moment statement. And what's crazier to me is how much support he's actually getting on it from fans, because Tony Parker, in my opinion, never got the props that he deserved from fans. Now all of a sudden when an analyst makes this type of assertion, now everybody's on board with it all of a sudden. Tony Parker, in my opinion, is one of the top point guards in the NBA. But when you ask fans for lists or when you talk about rating point guards, you never really hear his name come up. That's why I'm just so surprised that, you know, he's actually getting some support on these comments. His comments were definitely questions on the moment. Tony Parker just finished scoring 37 points in a Western Conference Finals game, and I think Jalen Rose got hype. I'm sure he's going to stand behind his words. But come on, third best player in the NBA? Come on now.
Here's the thing I want to make real quick. Go ahead.
Do you think the fans consider defense in their analysis of best point guard? And
when I talk
do you think
to fans
that Tony
about players, I don't think they ever consider defense with anything.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter what position you're talking about. You never really hear that, other than if you're talking like a center and they talk about block shots, but. For most positions, you never hear anyone mention defense.
I think that most of the people on this show can give Tony Parker buckets. He can't defend any.
But here's the thing. Here's why I think that it was kind of a prisoner of the moment. Outside of our podcast, I listen to Jalen Rose's podcast, and he hasn't mentioned Tony Parker as being one of the top 5 to 10 players all season. And this is a conversation that he often has. Like, you know, where'd that come from? Like, you've never brought him up all season. So now all of a sudden he had a big game in a big moment, and now he's a top 3 player.
Mike Conley constitute the best player?
That's
why I think it was kind of pom-pom.
Because it's not the knock Tony. You know, it's basically Jalen's opinion that I'm knocking. Because
right.
Tony Parker, you know, has been on that team for, what, 3 championships?
Yeah.
He's led the team in scoring for the past 3 seasons. And he's also led the team in scoring for 4 out of the last 5 and 5 out of the last 8 seasons.
So
Tony
Parker, he's an underrated player that became overrated.
Exactly. Whatever you think Tony Parker is, he didn't just become it. If you think Tony Parker is overrated, you know what I'm saying? Or even if you think he's good, he didn't just become good. He damn sure isn't at his peak after game 4 of the Western Conference Finals in 2013. So with his resume, you know, playing on a team with Tim Duncan and still kind of being the leader of that team, he didn't just become whatever people think he is. So how can you just all of a sudden make the assertion that he's the third best player in the NBA? And dog, like I said, what's even worse is there's actually fans who are going along with this.
I mean, it's one of those things where some people probably wanted to say it but didn't have the heart to, but not if someone like that said it, they'd have to say it. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like they're looking for some heart. They're looking for some heart, but it's like you haven't brought him up all season as being even in the top 10 in the league.
I never heard anybody say he was the best point guard in the league, let alone the top
player.
Yeah, one of the reasons he is not is because he's asked to do so much of the scoring versus the playmaking. He and Manu kind of share the playmaking responsibilities. He and Manu share some of the playmaking responsibilities. So Tony Parker is arriba, arriba, straight to the cup. But the funny thing is, as much as we make
out of that, B. Austin, you know, Tony Parker averaged 20 points this season, and this is only the second time that he's ever averaged 20 points in his career. His high is 22 points, but he's never averaged that many points. He's not a huge assist guy, but Tony Parker is the type of player where he can take over games and, you know, show you how nice he is, and then all of a sudden, even though his track record isn't all that steady, like on a superstar level, you know, he has people saying these kind of off-brand things and other people actually going along with it. Like, I'm just a little confused by the statement. Coming from somebody like Jalen Rose, I'm really confused by the statement.
He's a tremendous talent in terms of speed, and so one-on-one is very, very difficult to check him. But then when you throw in pick-and-roll basketball, which is what the Spurs do, if a big man is caught on Tony Parker, that's like death to them. So he gets into the lane at will, and he scores pretty easily and frequently when he wants to.
It's also a system thing too.
Yeah, it's very much a system thing. And that's not a knock to him, because I'm one of the people that have slighted Tony Parker for years, and I admit that. I think he's better than I've always rated him, but he's not a top five or top 3 point guard, I'll say.
What about
player? Okay, who are the top 3 point guards? We're going to say Chris Paul. Who else? Who are the top 3 point guards in the league right now?
Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook. Let me get back to you.
Dev, who are your top 3 point guards?
I don't know. You know who I want to say, but he had such
Steph
a bad
Curry?
Year. You know, the prisoner
yeah,
of the moment.
I wanted to say him too.
Prisoner
of
the moment is not
heart.
Even going to let that.
I was looking for some heart.
You want to say the other light skinned boy?
Yeah.
Prisoner
of the moment. You can't have a mediocre season these days. You fall off everybody's list. Deron Williams is like the 90th best player in the NBA to the casual fan right now.
Still, I've had this argument.
But I'll put him up against anybody at any time.
LeBron is top. He's still top five. He's still a top five PG.
I don't believe in light-skinned point guard, so you ain't going to get a cosign from me. But go ahead, though.
Of course, no particular order. Of course, you got Chris Paul. You know, I would still have to throw – probably have to throw Rondo in the top three.
Rondo!
And to me, it's always a toss-up with Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook, even though everybody you would ask would probably say Derrick Rose. But, I think it's a toss-up because I don't really think either of them are pure
point
guards.
Question. Here's the question to both you gentlemen. If you had your choice of Rondo or Parker, you would go Rondo?
Yes, Rondo, all day.
Okay.
All right,
cool. That's all. Anyway,
but
man,
those dudes, it's really a matter of what you need. So, and I'd rather have my point guard set the table, so, yeah.
No doubt. All right, real quick, let's get to Rob in San Diego. Rob in San Diego is online. Let's get him in. He's on the Digital Extreme Technologies Hotline. Rob.
What's up?
What's good, homie?
What's up, y'all? Hey, I'm blessed.
Rob,
man.
What up, though?
Congratulations, 150 episode, man. Who needs ESPN? We have War Room Sports.
Thank you.
True.
What's man. Good, though, Rob? How's the weather out there, man?
Oh man. Hey, man. God bless those folk up there in the East Coast that got tornadoes, but no, it's all good over here.
We have
90-degree weather right now.
We're actually having a heat wave right now.
Yeah, we're having a heat
but
wave right now. It's out of control.
We're having a humid wave, though. It's always humid when it gets hot in here. So.
I No, you can bake eggs on the ground. Shoot.
Yeah. I can't.
What's good though? What you want to talk about, Rob?
I want to talk about since we on the Spurs. I'm a hardcore Laker fan, West Coast.
Laker Nation is representing today.
Laker Nation in the building.
Oh, by the way, Devin, thanks for backing me up. Sorry, I'm not sorry. I took shots at AI because I always hear you'll be awesome. You always trash my Lakers, so I have to take shots at AI. My fault.
Yeah, you was trouble.
That's the easiest way to get to B. Austin. B. Austin talks trash. It's slander AI. You know, they calm him right down.
But, you know, with the Spurs, I know everybody talking about Tony Park. I respect the Spurs. I hate the Spurs, but I respect the Spurs. About what would the legacy be of Tim Duncan when he retired? Like, he retired after this season. What would the legacy be?
Man.
Greatest big man, greatest power forward ever.
Yeah,
I think he had that title. I'm not saying it was my opinion, but I think he already had that title universally like 4 or 5 seasons ago.
Yeah.
I think
he had it at Wake Forest. He was the best power forward ever.
I mean, and the thing is, people like Charles Barkley say it the most. So when you have somebody who's arguably the best power forward ever, you know, constantly saying that you are, that's going to work wonders for your legacy, first of all.
Carl Malone won't co-sign that. He will never admit nothing.
Yeah.
He's not co-signing that. But I definitely think that it's a great point that his legacy is going to be phenomenal because he's been so good for so long, right?
Yep.
And I was having this conversation with someone the other day, right? Would you rather have Tim Duncan's career or Shaq's career? And here's why I say that. Tim Duncan has been good for so long, but Shaq had like a 3 or 4 year run where he was out of this world. I don't know whether Duncan has ever reached those heights, but he's been so good for so long. You know what I mean? But Shaq had a point in his career where he was like you said, Dev, he was Wilt Chamberlain-y for like 3-4 years. But then you look at the rest of his career.
Shaq is an underachiever.
No, I'm not saying he's not. Listen to what I'm saying. He probably is because outside of those 4 years, his career, we talked about it earlier, we were talking about the Hall of Fame. He had 3 or 4 years, though, where he was on another planet. Like, it was his league. But Tim Duncan has probably never reached those heights, but he's been, so good for so long.
Steady as she goes.
Exactly. Yeah, so whose career would you rather be at reach those heights or would you rather just be steady? Let me ask you gentlemen this question.
That's a loaded question because Shaq's career came with a lot of stuff. Like Shaq made a lot of money because of basketball outside of basketball. But if we're just talking about on the court,
Like would you rather have a career where even though it was only for a couple of years, but you've reached heights that not too many have reached, or would you rather just be steady? For a long period
it's
of time.
It's a no-brainer.
I
might say Tim Duncan because Shaq, he got to a point in his career where he was kind of chip chasing, even though, you know, he had won championships.
He was, yeah, he definitely was.
As a leader on his team. But, you know, he started to move around too much. Probably when you ask that type of question, if a guy's been with the same team his whole career, I probably would, 10 times out of 10 take
his
career.
That's a good answer.
He's been steady with that.
You know what? This question is funny because it can go outside of sports. You can put it in business or music or whatever you want to do. Like, would you rather reach crazy heights or have a long, steady career? You know what I mean?
Would
so,
you rather be Soulja Boy or Talib Kweli?
But here's the difference.
You know what?
Awesome.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about a one-hit wonder.
Might have the World Room Sports TV that joint.
Yeah, great question. But Rob,
Heat and Pacers.
What's your opinion, Rob? Wait, but think about this, though. Tim Duncan, he baptized Blake Griffin. I mean, come on. Tim Duncan is all fundamentals. I love Shaq. It is hard for me to say, but I got to tell the truth. I love Shaq, but coming in a training camp overweight every season.
Every season.
See, but Shaq knew what he had. Look, I got this young boy Kobe. I'll let him do all the heavy lifting, then I'll make him mad when the playoffs start and I start asking for the ball again.
But you know what, though? The couple years that Shaq took it serious is when Shaq, and that's why B. Austin, I kind of agree with you that he did underachieve because it was only a couple years that he took the game serious and put the work in, and we saw how great he could be. But for the most part, he never gave us that because he didn't put the work in. He was too busy, you know, spitting 16s and, you know, doing Shazam.
I got Shaq averaging 37 and 18 if he wanted to.
If he wanted to. But, Rob, man. Rob, man, thanks for your call. Thanks for the support out there in San Diego, man. We definitely appreciate it, homie.
Spread the word.
Y'all just keep doing what y'all doing. And I ain't saying become mainstream, but blow up, please.
Man, you already know, man. Get me.
Thank you,
when
man.
You see me with a white woman? I'm sorry. My fault.
All right, peace.
All right,
Rob. Jimmy kissing magic? No, I'm playing.
All jokes aside, though, man, before we get out of here, let's talk about this Heat Pacers series, man. Did you guys think it would be tied at two at this point, or how long do you think this series would be?
Slugfest. I can't say I would thought it would, I'd be a liar if I said that, because I said that the Heat were going to win in five. But remember, my prediction was Heat in five, but every game was going to be, like, down to the wire. And I thought that, you know, when it came down to the wire, that the Pacers weren't going to be able to get over that hump. But two times we've seen that they've been able to do that so far, and it seems like the size advantage that people talked about prior to the series is really, really rearing its ugly head as far as the Heat is concerned. It's ugly.
Yo.
But
quiet as kept. Yo, quiet as kept. They should be a 3-1, yo.
They should have won that first game. The first game is the game that made me shake my head. That's the game that made me say, see, there's my prediction coming true. Like, they can play with this team all night, but then when the end of the game comes, they're going to make mistakes and the Heat are going to, you know, take the game. And that's what they've done. It's a difficult task now because nobody's really won two games in a row. And you're asking them to go back to Miami and win a game five. If the Pacers can do that, I think they'll be in a good position, even though we've seen the Heat be down 3-2 before and come back.
Lance Stephenson gives me heart palpitations, man. Like, if he was a Sixers and we had Lance, I'd be ready to kill that dude, man. Because
he's a love-hate
player. Makes so many mistakes. His good plays
are off mistakes.
His good plays are mistakes. Like, when they fouled him on the three, that John would have went in if he didn't foul him.
Yo,
Lance Stephenson is the best and worst player in the court sometimes at the same time.
Like, don't get me wrong. I like Lance Stephenson. I like that he goes hard the way that he does. He's fearless. His jump shot is broke. And the thing is, you know, when he makes a couple of them, you're in trouble because he's going to keep shooting them. And the thing – his thing is, when he misses, it's so ugly. When he misses, it's never like in and out, bounce off the rim. Like, it's always off the bottom of the backboard or side of the backboard. Or
it's like, what were you shooting at? What were you aiming for?
Yeah, his handle kind of
stuff. And then he carries the ball.
The way it looks.
He carries the ball on every dribble. Every third dribble is a carry, whether it's a move or not.
Yep. But the thing is, with carrying in the NBA, if they call that, then no game would ever get completed. So
this is absolutely true, man.
This is a day and age where you have to let that slide because nobody can really dribble.
Yo, speaking of that, man, we had a lot of talk this week. Did D-Wade travel at the end of game four, yo?
Man, that was the hardest. That's the hardest. I still haven't made a decision on that because it depends on – I've seen a lot of people arguing the fact that when he caught the ball, he took three steps before he pump faked and everything. So – if you're looking at that, yeah, that's a travel, but that's not what they called. They called the travel a step
call.
Back. And I think
the reason why it's such a confusing play is because
he stepped back like in slow motion. So I think everybody thought the move was finished, and then he stretched his leg to try to make sure he got behind the line. And it wasn't like a bang-bang play like a normal step back. So I don't really know the rules on the speed of a step back.
I think he walked multiple times, yo.
He definitely walked a couple times, man.
How do you want slow motion step back like that though? Like, what are you doing, man? Like,
see, that's why I think there may have been a travel because they may have looked at him since he took so long after he planted. They may have looked at that as establishing a pivot foot. Like, on a step back, you don't establish a pivot foot because
you know how you're
on the plant foot and then you hop back. But he planted, and it took so long, they may have said, okay, that right foot is your pivot foot now, so we're going to call this travel.
Yeah, they said you drawn is what they say. It's sort of like football. When they say a football-related move, My man wasn't making no basketball-related move. My man came in slow motion. It's like, yo, come on, man. He was.
And either way you slice it, both of those calls with that and the screen by LeBron, like the people who are Heat supporters all of a sudden, like they run around saying that they're cheating and it's a conspiracy and stuff like that. First of all,
why would they cheat against the Heat, though?
That's what I'm saying. If there's a conspiracy, it's not going to be to put a small market team in a winning position. Over
yo, you think they want to see Indiana and San Antonio? That's what they don't want.
Secondly,
you know what I'm saying?
Like, how can you say that the refs were cheating? Even if you think a mistake was made, how can you chalk it up to cheating if 2 days later the conversation of did he, didn't he on both of those plays is still going on? So how can you say the ref is cheating, but, you know, the argument is still going on whether he set an illegal screen and whether Dwayne Wade walked? And the screen was illegal because he stretched his foot out and he stepped on Lance Stevenson's foot. Everybody keeps talking about Dwayne Wade didn't even use the screen. That doesn't make the screen any less illegal because Dwayne Wade didn't use it. There's no way he could have been planted if his foot ended up on top of Lance Stevenson's foot. This is what I'm trying to get people to understand. And, you know, a lot of us are trained by the unwritten rules that the refs aren't going to let the stars get that sixth foul and they keep track of how many fouls they have. Look, man. If it's a foul in the first minute of the game, it's a foul in the last minute of the game. You know what I'm saying? They always talk about how it's a conspiracy league and the refs are paid to do this and they're cheating. But then when they don't do it, now all of a sudden everybody's upset because they didn't do the superstar call.
That's only because refs actually got caught cheating and stealing money. But anyway, Dad, though, real quick, though, before we get out of here, prediction for the rest of the series.
Sheesh. It's one of them things that may sound cliche, and you've probably heard it all week, but I can't pick against the Heat. I can't see them losing until they actually lose. So,
right,
I wouldn't be surprised
if
they won the next two. I really wouldn't.
B. Austin, prediction for the rest of the series, B. Austin.
Heat in seven.
Okay. I think there's only one way that Indiana can actually, like, pull this off.
Win game five.
One of my favorite players has to step up, man. He has to be found and step up and win the game.
Wake up, Mr. West! Wake up, Mr. West! Mr.
D. West.
Mr. West. Mr. West has to step his game up and use
it. Y'all heard they West.
Why?
Wow,
he don't have to step it up. They scared of him.
They made
some
comments.
But some games,
if
you watch some games, he just be like, he doesn't go full throttle, it seems like. He's just there.
Right. You know, LeBron and David West both got fined for flopping on the same play.
Yeah.
These dudes bumped into each other and both flopped. And both got fined.
And
Lance Stevenson got fined for flopping as well. And somebody's foul got upgraded to – David West's foul got upgraded to a flagrant from last
flagrant
game.
Flagrant one.
Yo, I know this has nothing to do with this series, yo, but if they got fined for flopping, yo, Tony Allen should have a 10-game suspension.
Should he?
All right, so, man, it's been a chippy series. Maybe not as chippy as last year. Some of this one may just really fall into the category of physical. Last year it was chippy. Like, Granger wanted to fight LeBron, like, every fourth play up the court. So, now you tell these two teams don't like each other, and you can kind of appreciate that in today's day and age of friendly sporting events like we talked about earlier. So, I can appreciate the way they go at each other. It's a very exciting slugfest, and I can't wait to see the rest of it.
Man, you ain't never lied. I'm excited about, like, you know, game five as well as the rest of the series, man, and can't wait to the final start. But with that being said, gentlemen, salute to you guys on our 150th show.
Buck 50.
It's time to roll.
Buck 50.
It's time to roll. Yeah, you get a buck 50. Anyway, thanks for joining us again in the War Room, good people. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, those on Facebook, Twitter. All the callers who chimed in and busted up with us, all the calls we couldn't get to. We had like 74 calls we couldn't get to. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another episode of us talking our jizz as we do. We'll talk NBA Finals and all the other big stories in this week of sports. Until then, enjoy your sports week, and we'll see you right back here next time. Catch our conversations all week online, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, anywhere online. Just look for War Room Sports, and we're talking sports. And don't forget, War Room Sports TV. Rate, comment, subscribe to our channel. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. I'll see you chumps on top.
called a blueprint. Every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, E-Off, and Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. It's not down. Call it 323-4-0012. If you're going and you're sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, let's talk push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secrets, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us. War Room Sports.
www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.